There's a heavy and vulnerable conversation to have. This platform is a safe place for all individuals to come share their life's journeys of surviving grief without judgment.
I'd like to welcome you all to the QT Surviving Grief Podcast. My name is Tiffany Ware, and I am the podcast host. And I am so excited today. I have a special gentleman on the line. I met him when I was probably a little girl. We went to the same church together, Friendship Missionary Baptist Church. And his mom and my mom became really, really, really tight. And from that point on, we was just all family. And so today, I would like to introduce the son and present to others, Mr. Homer Smith.
Hey, man. Homer. Hey. Thank you for having me on the show. Thank you.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you, Homer. I really, really do. I was telling some people before I even started this podcast, you were one of the people I reached out to just to get advice. And you was just right there and ready and willing and just so supportive of the whole idea. So I want to give you your flowers right now and just tell you I appreciate it.
Hey, that's good. Hey, I applaud you for keep doing it. It's just all about consistency. Keep going and going and going. But hey, you're doing a good job. You got some good episodes.
I appreciate it. Thank you. This is a highly anticipated one right here. So
I think
we're going to make some magic today. All right, Homer Smith. Well, Homer, I just want you to tell the people, who is Homer Smith? What's your background? Where are you from? Just give us a little insight into who you are.
All right, man. Like I said, my name is Homer Smith. Everybody call me Home Team. I'm a father. I'm a son. I'm a happily newly married, you know.
Congratulations.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I'm an uncle. You know what I'm saying? I'm a friend. I'm originally from Chicago, Illinois. We came to Columbia, Tennessee, me, my dad, my mom, and my brother. And, man, we all was in the house together, it was like a comedy show. a comedy show and a debate at the same time.
I could see that.
Yeah. So it was never a dull moment in the Smith household, definitely. But hey, I'm just an ordinary guy, man, trying to live right, do the right thing, and learn from my mistakes.
That's all of us can do, Homer, honestly.
Yeah.
It's all we can all do. So every day is the learning lesson for sure.
It is.
I'm glad you said that, because speaking of that, I want to know, as our icebreaker for today, what are you most proud of right now today?
Today? What I'm most proud of? I thought about that question. Well, one, I'm proud of, I'm still here. I'm 46 years old. I'm proud of my kids are healthy. Mm-hmm. Both my kids are squares. I tell them, I'm proud of you being a square. You don't have to be no thug. You don't have to pretend to be tough. Yeah. I'm proud of my kids. They live in healthy lives. You know what I'm saying? And proud thing I'm that about maybe 2-3 years ago, my oldest son, Khalil, he 26 now. He got baptized.
That's one
of the proud moments of my life. You know what I'm saying? Because he came to me and was like, Dad, I want to get baptized. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of a proud moment. It kind of let me know that I'm doing something right. He was watching me, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And he made a decision to give his life to Christ. So that was kind of some proud moments of mine.
Yeah, that's a lot to be proud about, Homer. Mm-hmm. It really is. Everything you just mentioned is a lot of what we're going to get into today. And so I'm glad you're able to highlight those moments that stick out in your head, because you definitely got some stuff to be proud of.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
For sure. Well, we're going to start with young Homer. And I text you and asked you about the title of this podcast episode. Mm-hmm. And you said, I want it to be called The Prodigal Son.
Prodigal Son. I said,
ooh, that's powerful.
Yeah.
I'm like, do tell. Mm-hmm. So, I just want you to kind of explain why you wanted that to be your title, Homer.
Okay. So maybe some people don't even know the prodigal son story, you know what I'm saying?
That's true. That's right.
So it was a kid who told his dad, you know what I'm saying, to give him everything that he was supposed to get when his parents died. But he wanted it right then and go and pillage it off to the to the world, whatever. Well, I didn't
Right.
necessarily ask my parents to give me all the material things, right? But the things they gave me was like the wisdom, the structure, and boundaries. I kind of took that into the world and kind of straddled the fence, to say a little bit. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't into drug dealing, but I was around drug dealers. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't a gang member, but I was around gang members, you know? And the wisdom, I was talking about the wisdom of it, because my dad used to tell us all the time, you know what I'm saying? Watch the company you keep. You know what I'm saying? Your friends, people you hang around, they don't act like you. You become start to act like them. The trouble they get into, you could be a victim of that. You know what I'm saying? It's the thing my dad said to us still to this day. The other day he used to text me this: the life you save may be your own. So, and I came to the story of the prodigal son. You know, he kind of came to himself when he was in the pen, when he was in a pig pen, kind of at his lowest. And what I kind of related was that in my lowest, I was in a hospital bed from gunshot wounds. You know what I'm saying? And it just came to a point in my life that, you know what I'm saying, that the Holy Spirit and God was like, hey, what you, you know, how far you want to go? You know what I'm saying? I set a path for you, but it's up to your choice if you want to go down it or you want to go down to a path of destruction. The path that I was going down, straddling the fence, you know what I'm saying, ended up leading me to almost losing my life for bad decision making. And just like the prodigal son, when I came to myself and went back home, my parents didn't judge me. They didn't say, why you do this, da, da, da. They welcomed me with open arms and knitted me back together like Humpty Dumpty, kinda.
That's a blessing, Homer, you know, just to have parents like that
who
welcome you back. You know, we all make, especially when we're young, make, you know, some poor decisions, but to have that type of love, to just be like, come on back.
Yeah.
You know, that's a blessing within itself.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, I appreciate you for explaining that, because that title, especially like you say, people who know the story, it's like, oh, this is going to be interesting.
Right.
That makes complete sense.
Right, man.
And we're going to get, I'm going to get into some questions about that, your testimony, because you definitely have a very powerful testimony. But I wanted to ask you, how was it growing up? Because I want to set this picture up of leading up to that situation. How was it growing up in the, I guess you grew up in like the 80s and 90s, that era?
I mean, I'm born in the late 1900s.
Late 1900s. Gotcha. But yeah, how was it growing up? Like, I know you mentioned the household, you said it was a straight comedy show, but how were your parents? Like, what was that teaching like growing up, being reared?
Man, so they played I look at it like they actually played like a balanced part in our life, right?
Okay.
So my mom, she was the nurturer. You know what I'm saying? She was the one who do the Bible studying. You know what I'm saying? She the one who pulled the affirmations into us. You know what I'm saying? And my dad, he was the more of the structure, the discipline. You know what I'm saying? How to be accountable. You know what I'm saying? He was the rearer. Now y'all may see my daddy at Lowe's, be like, man, this man is a nice teddy bear. He wasn't always like that. He wasn't.
Gotcha.
We used to always be like, man, he's so mean to us, but he's nice to everybody, you know. But we thank my dad to this day. We thank him for the whoopings. We thank him for the times. You know what I'm saying? Well, we didn't understand. We kids wanted to pit our parents against each other and all that stuff. But man, it played a major role in our life. And we grew up in Chicago. I started out, I was raised and born in Chicago. So we was around family, surrounded by family. You know what I'm saying? We didn't have godparents, and we didn't go to boys and girls clubs and stuff like that. We went over our Uncle Bub house, you know what I'm saying? My Auntie Lil Joe house. We went always over family house. And my dad worked at General Motors, and that's what transferred us to Tennessee. So that was a big dramatic change for a kid. For us, we moved away from family to move to Tennessee, where it's just now just us four.
Gotcha. Wow.
So
from the city to
the country.
Like that was a huge shift.
Yeah. Yeah, a huge shift. Especially, you know, you think about it, like, so the parents, they move down, they move, you know what I'm saying? They got jobs, they got somewhere they gotta go. Kids, we move down here, we gotta figure it out. You gotta make new friends. You don't have the cousin, you don't have, you know what I'm saying, nobody to kind of guide you or nothing. You kind of just learn from scratch.
Right.
So that could be a challenge. That could be a challenge, especially for young boys, because that's when it's easy to get in trouble and everything.
Yeah, that's very true. Very true. Well, shifting out of that, how do you parent? Because I know you, so you have Khalil, your oldest, which you was really young when you had him.
Yeah.
And I know now your second son, Genesis, he's, it was a big age gap between those two.
Yeah.
So how do you, well, it may be a two-part question, Homer. As like a younger father, was you in your teens when?
Yeah, I was 20 when I had Khalil. Yeah, I was 20 years old.
Okay, so 20. So right out of your very still young.
Yeah.
Up until now, like, what is your parenting style? And with that being said, do you have any advice for younger guys who are parents at that young of an age?
So when I was in my 20s, when I had Khalil, what helped me was that my mom was alive. So she really she really stepped in a whole lot. She was raising both of us, actually.
Yeah.
Right, what I'm saying? She was still raising both of us, really. You know what I'm saying? And my youngest son now, he's 13. So so I kind of just go with what I learned from my dad. You know what I'm saying? Even though it's the struggle of that my dad, he raised us, we was all in one house. And now, you know what I'm saying, I got a son kind of outside in another home. So it's kind of an adjustment, but, you know, we doing the best we can. You know what I'm saying? I still love my boys, love me, and we see each other all the time.
Okay, that's good. That's awesome. That can be a little challenging, but like you said, you're still an active part of your both of their lives, you know? And so that's a good thing that you're able to work that out.
But to the end of your last question, advice I would give to a young kid, man, don't have kids. Just slow down. You know what I'm saying? Slow down. The time will come. A time will come, man. I tell you, it's difficult to have kids, especially when you're a kid.
Yeah.
So slow down, man. You know, we don't become real adults until we dang near 30.
Right.
But we need to just take your time. Take your time.
Yeah.
It's
a phrase, you know, don't grow up too soon, too quick. And it's a true statement. Cause like you just said, you got your whole life to, you know, have kids, to get whatever you want to do in life.
Right.
But even that, I'm sure it was challenging. Cause like you said, you were slick, you know, when you turn 18, you really not grown.
You really
so
not
like
grown.
You said, you know, depending on your mom to really help with, like you said, raising both of y'all.
Right.
I'm sure
right.
that was an adjustment for sure.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Cause when he started crying, I give it to her. I don't know what I don't know what to do with him. Man.
Right.
Yeah, but this next time, you know, mama ain't around now, so I gotta do it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, let me ask you this, Homer. I know we talked about the prodigal son, the whole construct of that. Do you have any advice? I feel like nowadays, a lot of adult children, and I'm gonna say 20s, 30s, I'm gonna say 20s and 30s. I feel like a lot of them are in that prodigal son phase where, you know, you mentioned earlier about accountability and how a lot of people will blame their parents for, oh, you didn't give me this or that back then. And so this is why my life is ended. When in reality, it's because of your choices.
Right.
So do you have any advice on the parent side of that for navigating the situation? Because I feel like sometimes parents may feel like, you know, oh, did I do the right thing? Or, you know, I raised you the best I could. I gave you everything in the world. Your decisions are your decisions.
Right.
So I just want to know if you have any advice, like, to kind of soothe them parents and just, like, let them know that, you did the best you could. You did what you could.
Right. I think parents, we have to be, you gotta be stern with kids nowadays. You gotta be stern. That, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, when we was kids and our parents just tell us, I'm not your friend. We have to get to the point that the kids and the parent, we are not friends. We're not, like my dad said, I ain't raising you for you to like me.
That's right.
No, we can't do that. We can't do that. We gotta teach kids about how to handle their emotions. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. How to handle conflict. That's a big problem. We got a problem. We don't handle conflict well. We don't handle quote unquote being disrespected. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. We don't handle that well, and we make a 5-minute decision that can cost you your life, cost somebody else their life, or have you sitting somewhere for 30 years for a 5-minute emotional decision. And as parents, we gotta notice these things. You know what I'm saying? You gotta notice when your son coming in here with these different baseball caps. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Your kid coming home with these different type of attitudes. You can't just brush it off. We can't brush it off. We got to find out what's going on. You got to dig in. You got to have uncomfortable conversations.
Yeah, that's true. And now you got social media, which is a whole nother piece we didn't have growing up.
You know?
I mean, I didn't get my first phone. I went to Memphis to go to college.
I had
a minute phone. Yeah. And that minute phone was to be used because you was driving now. And if something happened to the car, you call us.
Right.
It wasn't for social stuff.
Right.
You know, you're right. That's a big part of it, homie. It really is.
We got to be parents, like our parents. Like our parents were hard on us. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
If you
don't want to be hard, but it's the only way a kid going to survive. And strive and be successful in life.
Yeah. And the choice is ultimately left up to you. You know, Mr. Hickman at Central, he used to always say, make it a great day and not the choice is yours. Okay, after, you know, you've been raised, like, the choice is yours.
Yeah.
You know, where your life goes. So, I just wanted your perspective on that because I know, you know, just due to your experience and some of the things that have happened in your life, just being interested in, like, what your thoughts are from a parent perspective to make those parents feel like, okay, I did what I was supposed to do, and now it's in your hands as an adult.
Yeah, and then, hey, it's some parents that ain't do what they're supposed to do. You know what I'm saying? That's a sad reality, too. It's some parents that ain't, you know what I'm saying? Well, I think every kid, everybody got somebody, you know what I'm saying, they can reach out to or talk to.
You know what I'm saying?
The hard part is the first step, just going to talk to somebody. You know what I'm saying? Taking the pride down, taking the ego down. You know what I'm saying? You finding yourself every time you getting mad, you blowing up. You need to find you some help. Find out, recognize that. You know what I'm saying? Don't be afraid to ask for help. Because everybody don't know everything.
No. Nope. You're right. That would say, you know, trouble's hard, easy to get into, hard to get out of.
That's a true statement.
Very hard to get out of. So I appreciate that, Homer. I just wanted to kind of explore them questions with you because I think that's a big piece of kind of what I've been seeing happening in the world right now. So
yeah,
I appreciate that. So we're going to get into your testimony, Homer, but I want to ask you this first. Have you ever heard, I know it's certain pieces of the Bible, I know you are very much know about the Bible, where...
I don't know everything.
Okay. I just want your opinion on this one thing. You know, they often say that warning comes before destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's a true statement?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. I think it's a true statement. If you're not paying attention, later on you'll look back and you'll know, like, oh, that was it. That was one.
Yes.
So, yeah, that is true.
Yeah. It's something I've been dealing with. And I'm like, I just wonder if other people, what their perspective of that is, because I definitely feel like God lets you know certain things.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, do we pay attention? Like you said, that's the main thing.
Right. Because God, when the Holy Spirit is speaking to you, he ain't speaking, hey!
No, he ain't speaking
like that. He's speaking, hey, psst, slow down.
Mm-hmm.
He's speaking quiet, slow down. But if you got all this noise and distraction, you ain't gonna hear it.
Yeah.
You gotta get away from the noise.
Yeah, it's like people will say, something told me to do this or that. That's something, it's the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm. Listen.
Telling you. Listen in all caps.
Yeah, listen to all
caps.
That's
right. Mm-hmm. Yes, very true. So out of that, Homer, I want you to share you mentioned earlier, and I know you are a gun violence survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to give you the opportunity to really take us back to that day, you know, and share your testimony.
Okay. I'll share as much as I can. So,
okay.
man,
year?
It was dang, what was it, 19. It was in the late 1900s, y'all.
Late 1900s.
1999 in November. Man, in the house, sitting in the house, and the first time we just all sitting there, mm-hmm. you know, ain't nothing going on, and then we just hear a sound like just like that. It didn't sound like a gunshot or anything, and gotcha. we heard that. It was three of us in the house. Okay. We heard that. I kind of stood up, and then I just heard shots. Da 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 da.
Wow.
And next thing I know, boom! I was hit. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't knocked out. I wasn't in no excruciating pain, but I could hear blood. I could hear blood like goop, 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 goop. I could hear that. Mm-hmm. I couldn't move my arm. I was spitting teeth out and everything. And man, when I got to the hospital, I basically had a bullet. I was shot right here, and the bullet basically stopped right underneath my eye. And I had a bullet shot. I got shot in the arm and grazed in the side. And I got air flighted to Vanderbilt Hospital and everything. And the amazing part about it is my mom, my dad, of course, they showed up. And my mom came in there, and she just brought a calmness to the room. You know what I'm saying? She made sure they removed all the mirrors and stuff out the room. Uh-huh. And, man, she prayed over me, and then she actually left the room. And the hospital people looking for her and everything. And she was in the other hospital rooms praying for other patients in the hospital. In the same hospital her son is in the ICU. And, you know, my parents, my mom, they were looking for my mom. They found her. And they're like, Miss Smith, you know, your son in here. You could be in here with him. And my mom's like, well, you know, he covered. He okay. He all right. Now, I'm sitting there, face busted up and everything. And she's saying,
right,
he okay. And she went to pray for other patients in the hospital. So, I was in the hospital for like, probably about 2-3 weeks. You know what I'm saying? My jaw wired shut. Man, I couldn't move my right arm for like a year and a half.
Wow.
I was going to physical therapies and everything, and getting frustrated with that because you know, I'm going to hear doctors saying, hey, doctor said, you probably ain't gonna never use your right arm again. You might get 10% of your movement back in your right arm. And I'm hearing these negative results. I'm getting frustrated. But my mom, she just every time I weave it off the road, she kind of, you know, bring me right back focused. We hear what they saying. You know what I'm saying? We hear the results that the doctor's saying. But the doctor, he practicing medicine. You know,
right?
We gonna go to the Father who knows all things. You know,
that's right.
Literally, no joke. After a year and a half, one day I was asleep, and I wasn't even thinking, and I just woke up and I just moved my hands like my right hand, just like that, and my right hand came in full motion.
Wow.
Just like that. It was like a normal day. I literally woke up. I wasn't even thinking about my arm not moving. I just woke up like, man, like they're like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my hand was moving. Ooh. Like that. Yeah.
Wow. It's powerful.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
Yeah. I got shot with AK-47 in the face and a Tech-9 in the arm. Yeah. It was real serious. And and the thing about it was, it wasn't a target after me. You know, it wasn't somebody who was like, I'm going to kill Homer. You know what I'm saying?
Gotcha.
But it was the things I was surrounded around.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? The activities I was surrounding around. Straddling that fence like I was talking about earlier. One selling drugs, but you're around drug dealers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You ain't a thug, but you're around thugs. So what that means, I'm just part of it just like everybody else.
Right.
Willis ain't got no names on it.
No, they
don't. You're around that crowd. That type of element is around you.
Yeah,
and that's what I was a result of. That was decisions that I had made. You know, say as an immature young man that could have lost his life because I want to hang around. You know what I'm saying? I see my partners, they selling drugs. They got all the girls. I ain't selling drugs, but you know what I'm saying? I want the girls.
Right,
you know what I'm saying?
Right.
My homeboy, they got the money going to the party, doing whatever. I want to go to the party too.
Yeah.
I want to ride in the big rims with them too.
Right.
I take my little $400 check. They got 4,000.
Right. Right. You trying to bow too?
Yeah, I'm trying to bow too. I got a little bit, Tim. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I still
got a gift for gab. I ain't got much money, but I had a gift for gab.
They get you right in the door.
Yeah, they get me right in the door. I just want to just let me in. You know what I'm saying?
Just let you in. Just let me in.
But hey, the results could be detrimental. You know what I'm saying? And it just won't affect you. It affects your parents. You know what I'm saying? At the time, Khalil was like maybe 1 year old.
Oh, maybe.
You know what I'm saying? What if I would have died? He wouldn't even know who I was.
Who you was, right?
Right. It was some decisions I had to make laying in the hospital bed. This is what you want to live, and this ain't even your life. This ain't how I was brought up. This, you know what I'm saying? I had to take responsibility. This ain't the life I want to live. This ain't how I even was raised to live.
Yeah.
So we had to take a man to just be man up and say, this ain't how I want to live. This ain't even how I'm supposed to live.
Yeah. Now, how old was you when that happened, hon?
20. I was 20 years old.
20. Okay, 20. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember us coming up to Vanderbilt. We didn't get to see you, of course. Mm-hmm. We just was I was a little girl, but I remember that whole, it was made. I remember that. And so, that is a true testimony.
Yeah.
I didn't realize those. I mean, those are some pretty, powerful guns and all that.
Yeah.
So what did it look like for you, like you said, laying in that hospital room and you're like, okay, I survived. Now what's my next steps? Did you just really reevaluate your life and who you had around and that type of thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did. I did. And when you, something like that traumatic happens your family know that you ain't no gang member. You ain't so people start coming up with blaming. But they do that. You don't do the da-da-da, you know what I'm saying? And this stuff get in your mind, and all of a sudden you just have to say, look, I put myself in these positions. I put myself around these people. I put myself in these circumstances, you know what I'm saying? That these things could happen, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You have to man up and be a man about it and make decisions that's going to not only protect you, but protect your family. You know what I'm saying? Because I could have had Khalil with me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know, my brother. You know what I'm saying? My brother could have been with me. And got killed. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So we just got to think that it ain't just about us. You know what I'm saying? The decisions we make affect not just us; they affect a lot of people.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
I like how you took accountability in that moment. You know, like you say, your family like, oh, he only like, but you're like, no, I did make some decisions that were not the best. And so I think that's outstanding for you to do that. Because it's hard to admit, something like that.
It is. And it's hard to detach yourself from some friends. You know what I'm saying? People that you cool with, that you like hanging around.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You like hanging around them. You know what I'm saying? But the direction they going and the direction you going is two opposite ways.
Two different.
Mm-hmm. It's two ways. And it's hard. It's hard. You know what I'm saying? You want to hang with your friends all the time. You want to do all this stuff. But if your friends doing illegal, like I tell my son Khalil, you see people pulling out guns and drugs, get out of there. Get away from them, bro. It ain't nothing that you think you better than them and all that. Is that that ain't the way you going. That leads to danger. Mm-hmm. That leads to destruction. Yeah.
That's right.
It may not happen that day, but it's a matter of time. I ain't never seen a drug dealer retired and he retired and everything was good.
No.
Nah, it ain't gonna work.
The rest of your life, you're looking around, you're coming back every day. It's no peace.
Yeah. Or somebody kills you, or you die.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get, or you go to prison.
You're right. Or innocent people around you get hurt.
That's right. That is so true. So. Yeah. 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 You're right, Homer. Everything you just said. And I appreciate you for sharing that, because I'm sure it's hard, probably sometimes even really. I know it's been years ago, but that's trauma, you know? Did you at the time, did you do therapy or counseling, or was that not something you chose to? Did you do anything like that?
I actually did that later on.
Okay.
I actually kind of did it later on, when I got about 30 something.
Okay.
But I was just straight my mom and dad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They was my therapist and my doctors.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so they, it was
qualified for sure for both.
Yeah.
Your mama knew that Bible. We gonna get into that, but she knew that Bible.
She, I was waking up when she put holy water on my forehead.
She anointing you with oil.
That's right.
I was gonna ask you too. You know, did you ever after that happened, Homer? Did you feel paranoid or was it PTSD attached to that event?
Mm-hmm.
Following that happening,
I still suffer a little bit of PTSD. Like if I go to people's houses, I kind of position my way how I sit, and I notice I do that too. So, man, especially people pull out guns. Oh, I get out the, I leave. I see y'all later.
Right.
So yeah,
right,
but at the beginning, right, when I first got out the hospital, mm-hmm, oh yeah, fireworks and stuff like that. I couldn't even be around that stuff. That stuff made me jump and everything.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. It's when you go through something traumatic like that, you do, that's just kind of part of it. I think mm-hmm, part of the trauma. Yeah. I mean, even what I've experienced, I don't even like being in Columbia like it. Cause I don't, you just don't know. You don't know where people are. It's just you have to be very conscious. I've always been conscious, but you do find yourself being way more conscious of your surroundings and mm-hmm, who you're around, what they got, all of it.
Yeah.
Definitely more conscious of that. Did you feel, I'm sure you felt anger. Did you ever want revenge for this, the situation that happened?
Yeah. At first, I can't lie. Yeah. I did. And I had people in my ear who was willing to put some revenge in.
Who was ready.
Yeah, who was ready.
Yeah.
But it was never going to end. It was going to do. It was just going to be enough. Yeah. It was going to be somebody else got your shot. Somebody else. I had a cousin, man. I got a cousin, and mm-hmm, he in the streets. You know what I'm saying? He in the streets. He been in the streets. Ain't no checking him out. He clocked in there. You know what I'm saying? He clocked in there. But he was a street dude, and he was the one saying, "Cuz, don't do no retaliation. Don't do nothing like that, man. You alive, man. Go live your life." And he was the type of person. He a retaliation type person.
He was the last
person I'm thinking about telling me not to do nothing. But he was the one like, don't even do nothing, man. You young, you still alive. Leave that stuff alone, man. Streets ain't for you. It's all right. Mm-hmm. You found out it ain't.
Yeah.
Leave it alone.
That's powerful. Yeah. For somebody, like you say, this up that world to be mm-hmm, like, don't even go down that route because it's not going to end well.
Right.
That's I was trying to think of a word, but that, that's
but who powerful. Better? But who better to tell you than somebody who in that world? Like
that's in that world. You don't
you don't want
to
be.
So
over
you
here.
Know you need to listen to you know. It's like we all got that one family member, a couple family members, a few family members that's a part of that world. Mm-hmm. But like you say, they be like just chill.
Yeah. And that's them. You know what I'm saying? That's their life. It obviously he know more than I know.
That's
why
and that's good because he actually wanted you to be okay and not be in a situation, you know, again or mm-hmm, back and forth. So that's really powerful. Did you get justice, Homer? Legal justice from that?
So yes and no. Like no one was arrested.
Gotcha.
I think I seen maybe like one detective.
Okay.
And that was it. It wasn't no real investigation. It wasn't no thorough thing, nothing like that. But I did get like a financial compensation for it.
So every
state, let me drop some juice on people. Every state got a thing called Victims of Violent Crimes. Every mm-hmm, state got this. And what that is that if the city that the crime happened, if they don't find out who did it or anything, the state has to compensate the person who was afflicted in the crime.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, so I got a little compensation from that. But let me tell you, I'll trade that money in not to be shot at going through all that rehab stuff.
Oh yeah.
It wasn't worth that.
It's not worth it.
Right. But I didn't turn down the check either.
I don't blame you.
Okay.
I don't blame you. I got you.
Okay. All right. Right.
But like you said, yeah, who wants to go through all that for that? But
yeah.
That's good. I'm glad you dropped it. That's good knowledge for people to know, you know, yep. Maybe
every state in America has it's called Victims of Violent Crimes. And okay. if they don't arrest or convict nobody for a crime, yeah. you get compensated for that.
Wow. Yeah. That's a good thing though. Cause I mean, at least it eases I think you're out of work. I mean, it's a lot of stuff that's financially affected by something like what you went through. You can't work. You can't, you know, so it does, it helps in a lot of different ways, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
By getting that benefit.
Oh yeah.
But last thing in this whole segment, like I said, I really appreciate you for going down this road because I'm sure it's not easy for you to recount a lot of this stuff. What did forgiveness look like for you? Were you able to forgive? And if so, like how? What was that process like?
Was I able to forgive? I was able to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons why I was able to forgive because. The harsh reality is I ain't had no business in that world.
I see.
I ain't had myself involved. I shouldn't have been involved in the stuff I was around.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of put myself in a bad position.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I kind of, not saying I'm better than anybody, not saying I'm, you know what I'm saying, right. You know, I'm not better than nobody. But at the same time, I know who I am. And I know how I was raised. And, right. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't raised like that. You know what I'm saying? And I put myself in a position to get harmed. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Not saying I deserved it or anything, but
right.
You put yourself in a position for things to happen. You know what I'm saying? If you put yourself in a good position, good things can happen. You put yourself mm-hmm. in a dangerous situation, dangerous things can happen. And it took a while to forgive.
Yeah.
It took a while to forgive. You know what I'm saying? But I had to forgive for myself to move on.
Okay, I see. Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying? I couldn't hold no bitterness and anger and all this nonsense. When I got a life to live. I had a son to take care of and everything.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense, homie. They always say, you know, forgiveness is really for you, not for the other, you know, person. That's a pretty popular mm-hmm. phrase. So I like the way you just like kind of laid that out. So
yeah.
I appreciate that. Well, shifting gears a little bit, I want to talk about Miss Rosemary Smith.
Okay.
Miss Rosemary was my, I'm going to say this. I hope nobody get offended, but I think Miss Rosemary was like one of the few people that I really learned from when I was in church.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, I remember they had got us a bunch of Bibles. And I mean, we did in-depth study as teenagers, like 13, 14, 15 years old. And she did not play. And no. We had homework like we was in school. You know, she really was a Bible scholar. And she was really, you know, she wanted us to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, she has always stuck out in my mind as being that person for me growing up. I know how she impacted me. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, she transitioned, but she was not her diagnosis, you know. And mm-hmm. so I want you to tell the story of Miss Rosemary Smith.
Man, for those who don't know, Miss Rosemary Smith, that's my mother. You know what I'm saying? One thing that was genuine about her is that she didn't necessarily teach the Bible as much as she taught how to have a relationship with Christ. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
She was definitely pointing to having a relationship in Christ. And not this, and you know, and like, she didn't give us Bible. She didn't give us the old school Bibles. When we started out reading the Bible as a young kid with the thous and all that, she gave us the word that we could understand at the time. You know?
That's right.
She gave us stuff that we could understand, you know what I'm saying? That we could understand. Yeah. And I can remember, we used to have Bible study in our house every night. You know what I'm saying? Every night. And we had to learn Bible scriptures, you know what I'm saying, as a kid. And man, I couldn't, like the next day, I couldn't remember no Bible scripture.
Mm-hmm.
The next day she would say, oh, what we supposed to learn? Chris knew them all. Chris said, boop, boop, like that. But she kept pulling, She kept pouring into us. You know what I'm saying? She kept pouring into us. And she was an example that you could be a Christian don't mean you perfect.
That's right.
Christian don't mean you holier than thou. Christian don't mean that you don't get mad. Christian mean don't mean you ain't gonna cuss. Christian don't mean that you it's some people that you don't like. That ain't what Christian is. You know what I'm saying? She was teaching that you got a relationship with Christ. You got a Holy Spirit that can guide you if you listen. You know what I'm saying? The Bible scriptures she was giving us to memorize, that was putting into our heart that when time got tough, them things was gonna come out. You know what I'm saying? The things you was like, man, how do I, you know, it'd be times you be having scriptures in your mind. How do I know that? That's when when we was a kid and you had to memorize these Bible verses. You know what I'm saying? And she was good at that. She was good at showing us, you know what I'm saying, about caring for people that's less fortunate than us. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Even when we lived in Chicago, she used to take us to the dangerous projects and we'd be, I'm probably 10, Chris probably 8. My mama, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, she was a pretty lady. You know what I'm saying? She wasn't no ugly lady. She was pretty.
Oh, no.
So she's 20-something years old. Her fine self walking in project. Hey, with two little boys. We scared them up.
Yeah.
She had no fear. Like,
y'all got to defend if something going
to happen. Yeah, well, how are we going to defend this? She was going to trenches. Yeah. She was going to trenches take single mothers to church and everything. You know what I'm saying? She had a heart taking care of young ladies. You know what I'm saying? Looking out for young ladies and all that. She was a caring. If she wasn't my mother, she'd be a cook. I'll be talking to her like how you talk about her.
Yeah.
Man, she was just cool, man. She was cool as a fan.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like I said, I mean, I learned a lot from her. I tell you, and like you said, she was such a pretty lady. Just everything about her, like she definitely stood out for sure. A jewel for sure. So let me ask you this, Homer. I know it was a transition phase before she passed away. When you guys got that news, did you start kind of grieving the situation, like, oh my goodness, like, is this mean, you know, is she gonna be able to, you know, get through this? What was that like for y'all? Because I know, I mean, it's like all men, right? It's you, your brother, and your father.
Yeah.
How did y'all, and I'm sure she helped navigate y'all, I'm sure, to prepare you guys for whatever was gonna be, you know, God's will. But how was that for you?
Man, you know what was crazy about that is that our parents, they kind of always like prepared us for a time that they gonna pass. Like they used to always say, you know, we ain't gonna always be here. We ain't gonna always be here. But man, when they used to say that, we'll cut them off. Don't be saying that stuff. Don't be saying that stuff. You know what I'm saying? Don't say that. Because, you know, you look at your parents, especially when you little, you know, you look at your parents superheroes. They ain't gonna die. I'm a kid. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But as we get older, you know what I'm saying? That's a reality. That's a reality. And when my mom told us she had breast cancer, it was like everybody was like, dang.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, man, you know. And man, it was kind of rough watching her go through that. Yeah. It wasn't easy because, I mean, you looking at your mom. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
This is one who when you cry, she wipe your tears and everything. And now it's something that, you know what I'm saying, you can't even help your mom with. So you try to enjoy the best moments, you know what I'm saying, take advantage of the times you can, you know what I'm saying, try to forget that she's sick, you know, going through the chemo treatments. It ain't easy. It ain't easy, especially you watching your mom. And like you said, it's three males there, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
My dad, he showed no emotions. You know what I'm saying? So we ain't nothing but his little foot soldier, so we ain't showing no emotions either. But
either, but
when you're alone, you crying like, man, this show, you know, you think some days I still be like, man.
Yeah. Wow.
Like, man, you know, it'd be times I still be wanting to talk to her or still be needing her for something, you know? Cause she was a hell of a nurturer for us. So it wasn't easy watching her, man. Her last day on earth, man, she wasn't feeling well. And when she was like, she needed to go to the hospital, she was telling me, like, this ain't going to be good. And right there, I turned back to the 8-year-old little Homer. Don't say that. Mm-mm.
Right.
Don't say that. Don't say that. But she was like, nah, you need to, for real. This ain't no joke. Yeah. Yeah. So, she passed away right in front of us, man, at home.
Yeah. That's a tough thing to go through too, Homer. I watched my grandmother. I was with her when she passed. And it, you know, to see somebody transition out of this world, that's tough.
It is.
Very tough.
Yeah. You see how you look like, it sucks. Yeah, yeah. It does.
I had dreams and I never went and got, you know, therapy or nothing for it, but I just had never experienced nothing like it before.
Yeah.
And so that's tough to deal with. Did you get therapy or talk to anybody about that?
Mm-mm. No, not really.
Yeah. Yeah,
we kind of just dealt with it. We just kind of dealt with it as a family.
Yeah. But I, you know, knowing Miss Rosemary, I'm sure she probably had started kind of preparing, like you said that day, having those conversations and really trying to prepare you guys for, you know, whatever it was gonna be.
Oh yeah. She's like you know how like the doctors. You know how they got long crazy names for these little cancers and stuff like that. But she used to have us type them in Google and look them up and look at the life expectancies and all that stuff. We'd be like, man, I don't want to look at. She used to have me look that stuff up.
Oh God!
I'm like, man, I don't want to look that up. Oh well, look. Now you got me on the clock. You know what I'm saying? Now you got me looking at the clock like, oh man, you know. But
man.
Yeah, she was preparing us, you know what I'm saying? She was giving me little instructions, you know, before she passed away, you know, like, take care of your brother, and this and that, you know what I'm saying? After a while, I had to stop saying, I'm like, okay, man, what?
Yeah,
she was like, you know, you're gonna be the one in charge, you can't let your daddy, don't let your daddy do this, I'm like, you need to go tell him that, you know what I'm saying? Like she going out of town, so you need to let this man in.
Right. It's a grown man. What I'm gonna do? I'm the child.
You're right. I'm the kid. You know,
full grown man.
Man, but yeah. But she was surrounded by loved ones. She was surrounded by sisters and everything.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's amazing how like our loved ones. In a way, they all prepare us for that. You know, you can never be prepared. Let me say that first and foremost. Right. But in conversations that you think about that you have with these people, like over, you know, years and days and even weeks leading up to, you know, what happens, it just shows the love that they have and they want to make sure we're okay.
Yeah.
It sounds like that's definitely what she did for y'all.
Yeah, I think she was just preparing us, lighting the blow.
Yeah,
it was gonna be a blow, but it wasn't gonna be too hard. So man, but it was a good thing. Like Miss Ware, your mom, you know, Vanessa, you know what I'm saying. It was a lot of people who came, you know, who came and looked out for us and prayed for us. Everybody, at Friendship Missionary Baptist Church. Shout out to them. You know, the men's ministry. Everybody kind of poured into us. You know what I'm saying. Made us feel loved and everything. And but you know stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know what I'm saying, that's good and stuff, but when everybody leave, you know what I'm saying, it can be hard. When that's all the fanfare gone, you know what I'm saying, after the funeral and everybody gone back home, you start getting to reality, like, man, she gone for real. And you start, and then you start noticing, like, how big they were in your life.
That's
you know
right.
what I'm saying? The big roles they did play in your life. You're like, man. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I can't even call my mom. Like, mom, this girl, she ain't there. No, I don't get them cooking mama meals no more.
No more, right?
They don't cook like mama cook.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so we miss them things. And, you know, they ain't get to see the other kids. You know what I'm saying? Like, Chris got a little girl. You know what I'm saying? She always wanted a girl.
Yeah.
They had two boys.
And she reminds me so much of your mama.
Mm-hmm.
She reminds me so much of Miss Rosemary, for sure.
Yeah, and now we got a girl family. We don't even know what to do with her. We're a bunch of boys. She get emotional. Now it's like, what? It's one, two. It's like five boys and one girl.
Five boys, one girl.
We don't even know what to do with her emotions. We can't stop acting like a girl. We can't tell her that.
You can't tell her that.
No, we don't know what's going on with her. So,
Right, yeah.
But also what it did, it draws us closer to our dad, too.
Yeah, okay.
It drew us close to our dad. It was close to our dad. Because I think at one point, my dad thought we liked my mama more than we liked him. We like, no, you was just the one whooping us.
I think that mother-son bond, kind of like people talk about father-daughter, that mother-son bond is real.
Yeah, it is.
It's definitely a real thing.
It sure was, man. It was, man. She was a beautiful lady inside out.
Yes.
And, man, we miss her. And we just try to do the right thing the way she'll want us, what she'll want us to live.
Yeah. What's the, what is the greatest lesson you feel like she taught you, Homer?
The greatest lesson she taught us is treat people the way you want to be treated. Yeah, treat people you want to be treated. Even the ones who less fortunate than you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Just because they ain't doing well, don't mean that you're above them. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Look out for the lesser deeds. You know what I'm saying? Everybody ain't fortunate like you got. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
My mom used to take us in projects with garbage bags full of shoes and pass them out. My dad bought them. We pass the shoes out. You know what I'm saying? Treat people the way you want to be treated.
Yeah, that's amazing. And not just giving somebody a leftovers, like actually giving them quality things. I mean, that's like a servant's heart. I mean, that's real. She also taught us
that some people may look at that arrogant, but believe in yourself. Right. You know what I'm saying? She used to have us look in the mirror. You look in the mirror and believe in yourself. You handsome. You smart. Yeah. You ain't no dummy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You raised right. You know what I'm saying? Believe in yourself. So she used to pour encouragement into your kids. Pour encouragement into yourself. She used to put affirmations on us. You know what I'm saying? You important. You smart. You know what I'm saying? You going to school acting silly, but you ain't silly.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You know how to act.
That's important, especially, you know, I mean, I feel like we can all get down in the dump sometimes. So when you're able to pull what, you know, she has instilled in you, that's like you say, all this stuff comes out now, from the scriptures to the things she taught you, to those affirmations, all of that is feeding back into your spirit and it's coming out now through everything she poured in. So that's really powerful. Well, do y'all honor her memory in any type of way, Homer?
We kind of used to down, because my mom originally from Enabena, Mississippi. I don't know if y'all heard about it.
They told me about it when they
Your
went
mom
down
went
there.
Down there. She went down there, Enabena.
Daddy said, Tiffany, it ain't nothing but dirt road.
That's it. Dirt road and black folks.
They was nervous.
But look, it's a black college out there now. That's an HBCU college.
Ooh, okay.
Mississippi Valley State is in Enabena, Mississippi. So we used to go out there, and my auntie and them used to do barbecues and stuff.
Yeah.
But now we kind of just go down there and put some flowers on the grave.
Yeah,
we don't really do too much celebrating no more. She's been gone since 2011.
So.
But we still call each other and tell each other stories and memories.
Yeah,
stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that, though. I feel like when people pass away, you know, you're sitting around having dinner or whatever, it's like so-and-so would be saying or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's good.
Yep, that's how it is.
It brings a smile to your face and,
man,
you know, you have happy memories.
One of the things I used to miss about it, we used to wake up in the morning and we could hear my mama on the phone with her sisters. And they loud and they telling each other business and they telling our business too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Man, but the things I miss that now. We can hear phone just telling everybody business. They telling each other business and everything. But, man,
that is funny. That is too funny. I like, it's like everybody in our culture. That's how it go. Like parents talking to their siblings. It'd be like really telling everything. Everything. Well, I appreciate you for walking down that road, Homer, because I, like I said, Miss Rosemary was such an important person in my life.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you for sharing those memories of her. I know one big thing you have going on right now is the Home Team Show.
Yeah.
What inspired you to create that?
Man, so the Home Team Show, me and my brother, we host a podcast. And really, it goes back, like I told you, like how we grew up, it was a comedy show, debate show in our house between my mama, daddy, me and Chris. We sit at the table and be joking, debate, and by the end of it, everybody mad and get off the table and don't talk to them. So we've been doing it all our lives. You know, we've been doing it all our lives, man. And And man, we just really just decided to do it. We've been doing it since like, man, 2011.
Okay.
We've been doing it for a long time, me and my brother. And we like to showcase independent artists, you know what I'm saying, play their music. And we do interviews with in-state people, you know what I'm saying? We ain't trying to get the big names and everything. Sometimes you can learn from right where you at, you know what I'm saying?
That's right.
It's history right there in Columbia, Tennessee, that people can tap in. You know what I'm saying? It's talent right here in Tennessee. So we do stuff like that. We talk about different news stories, sports, entertainment, and like we always play independent artists and stuff.
Y'all show. I've watched a few of the interviews, and I, like you said, I like how y'all tap into like local people. Like you say, it is, we don't always, you know, like you're celebrating each other. And, I think that's a positive thing.
It's talent all around us.
Yeah,
it's talent all around us. So man, me and my brother, we do that. So y'all check us out on YouTube. We argue on there like we argue every day.
And that's genuine.
Yeah.
That's what really reaches people. Like, it's not no fake, no phony. Like, it's real. This is us. This is what we do.
Yeah.
And, people can really feel that type of energy. Yeah. They know it's real.
Right, right. Everybody who be around, that's how we are. We just got a camera in front of us now.
Yeah.
So we try not to cuss as much. We try that. We try to break it down.
Right, right.
We still hear our mama in our head say, don't say that, homie.
Don't say that.
Don't say that.
Right. It's like,
I'm telling you a funny story about my mom real quick. My mom, she used to let us say stuff like what we see on TV and stuff, right? So, like once a month, baby, we'd be like, Mom, can we tell you what we seen on TV? She'd tell, and boy, these motherfuckers, she'd be like, now, they didn't say all that.
Like, y'all getting carried away.
Yeah, we get it all.
Y'all doing the most.
This MLBS,
right?
Man, she'll let us get once a month. She'll let us go and get that out.
She like, y'all pushing it now.
Yeah. Ain't no like, way they say it'll be a cuss
keep
word.
Keep it to basic cuss word. The what people say, the regular cuss word.
Right. she tell us, don't forget I'm your mama now.
Right. Don't forget. That's funny.
Yeah, man. But
that's good though.
That's our show. That's what we be doing. We just have a good time and interview local people and stuff in Tennessee.
Yeah. Do you, like I said earlier, I'm new to this. What challenges have you found? Like, if anybody is watching this and they want to know more, you know way more than me about podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
What challenges have y'all ran into, or have y'all ran into any challenges?
Man, yeah. The biggest challenge, consistency. Mm-hmm. Consistency.
Okay. Consistency.
Keep doing it. Because you know what? Things come up.
Yeah.
Life be life
yes,
sometimes.
It is.
But don't stop. That's probably the biggest hurdle. That's probably the biggest hurdle we've been through. Being consistent. Being consistent. Because you're going to get content. You're going to have plenty of stuff to talk about. But put it on video. Put it on audio. Continue to do it. Even the days when you're stressed out and, you know, man, I don't feel like doing this today. Being consistent. Keep pushing. Keep pushing. Because it's going to open up. It's going to help people.
How often do y'all do y'all's episodes, Homer?
We try to do right now. We try to with our work schedule. We try to do at least twice a month.
Okay.
But we need to do more. We need to do more. But right now, to be consistent, we got, you know what I'm saying, we be having meetings with me and my brother, and we be like, we got to be real with ourselves. Let's do two. Let's get two a month.
Two
a month. Then we'll work on that. Let's get two. Let's get two done.
Right. I feel like it's like supply and demand, because I'd be like, I still got a whole job out here I got to do. So this is side stuff.
Right now.
So I
right
have
now,
fit it into the
your
schedule.
Your show going to blow up. Watch. Your show going to grow.
Appreciate it, Homer.
Your show going to grow. It's you're going to come to a crossroad, though. You're going to go to crossroad. What I'm going to do?
I appreciate that. I'm like, you sound like Miss Rose. I know she believes in speaking prophetically.
Yeah, so
I
yeah, feel like that's right.
What you do.
Yeah, it's going to grow.
Well, I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I really, really, really do. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
What do you think you've learned through podcasting? Like, I know, I feel like I done learned a whole lot this journey I'm on and what I'm doing. So what have you learned?
Man, I learned a lot about the technical parts, learning more about marketing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? How to reach people. Still staying in the integrity of our show. You know what I'm saying? We don't want to become a show that just report bull all the time. You know what I'm saying? Negative vibe, you know, that type of stuff. So we try to stay away from that. All that gossip and, you know, finding bad news. You know what I'm saying? So so we try to bring light to it. So a lot of I'm learning about marketing. How to present it, you know what I'm saying? How to speak clearly and sit straight and look directly in the camera, you know, stuff like that.
All the like technical things. And it is a lot.
Yeah.
How to have a hot light shining on your face and not sweat.
Right.
All of that kind of stuff. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense for sure. Well, yeah, we're going to drop everything in the description of this video so people can start following the show. Man, now, I know YouTube. Do y'all have a Facebook group?
We got a Facebook group. We got the Home Team Show Facebook group. And we also on Instagram.
And on Instagram. Okay.
Yep,
okay.
The Home Team
We'll get all that in the description below once this airs.
Okay.
And thinking about moving forward, what are some daily habits or rituals you do to keep yourself grounded, Homer? Like everybody has like different routines and things, but just to keep yourself kind of in sync, what are some things you do?
One thing I do for real every day I do is I turn off all TV electronics and sit in silence. Be still. Be still. I try to be still, shut off distractions, and just close my eyes, focus, just quiet for a few minutes. The world's so busy. You know, we're so busy. We got headphones. We got this. We got all kind of a lot of distractions.
Yeah.
So I try to every day. That's one thing I try to do every day, just be still, be quiet for a few minutes and listen. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes the spirit don't say nothing. Sometimes he do. But sometimes I just need just quiet. So that's one of the things I kind of do every day. And if you be quiet enough, you'll hear. So that's one of the things I do.
I hear a lot of people. That's a popular thing now. Like you say, just sitting in silence. And it's hard for us. And I don't know. I guess we just so used to going.
Yeah.
It feels awkward. It don't even feel right. But you got to get past that and just do it.
It start out hard at first. Because you sit there still and a thought will pop in your mind. You be thinking about something else. You got to train your mind. Be still.
Yeah.
Be still. One. So that's one thing. Man, wake up in the morning and just thank God for you grab Facebook.
Thank God
for waking me up. Just thank God for waking you up every day.
Yeah. That's right.
Then get to it.
How long do you sit in silence, Homer? Is it a certain time or is it just like whenever you feel like, okay, I done sit and now I'm ready to get my day started?
I don't know. I ain't got no time.
Sometimes
it can be 2 or 3 minutes. Sometimes it can be 10.
Yeah.
It all depends. I try not to put a limit on it. But it might be something I might miss trying to jump up.
Yeah.
But it helps me a lot. Start my day off just silent before we get to going.
Yeah, I like
that. Give my mind some peace.
Yeah. That's good. Good mindfulness practice for sure. I know we done talked about a lot. We talked about, you know, you being a gun violence survivor, you know, your mother and that process and also the home team. So, of course, just kind of rearing it back to the grief piece. Being that you've went through a lot of the things, because I'm sure even going through, you know, your testimony, I'm sure it was a little grief in some of it, because I'm sure it was things you couldn't really do because you were recovering and all of that. And then, like you said, the grief of losing anybody, especially your mother. Do you have any advice on coping skills for people who are going through grief?
Man, one thing we should try to work on is controlling our emotions during grief. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of times we can keep it inside and it's building up. And one little thing that might not be a big issue, you could blow it up to be. So sometimes we got to control our emotions when we're in a vulnerable state when you grieve.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You can go off the rim real quick. You know what I'm saying? Try not to get down on yourself or like grieving on loss of a loved one. Is try to, like the Bible say, think of the good things about them.
Yeah.
You know, think of things that kind of make you smile about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? things that you learned from, you know what I'm saying? A good time that you had about it. So that kind of help a lot in grief. And man, therapy. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I know in the, you know, in the Black culture, we kind of, you know, back in the day, people think you go to therapy, you crazy.
Yep, you crazy.
Now you crazy if you ain't going.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? Now you crazy if you ain't getting no therapy. You know That's what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
Man, if you at a church, hey, reach out to your pastors and them leaders. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. They got all kind of things now on the internet. You can go get some therapy, but you're crazy if you ain't going.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Therapy does help. Because sometimes you might have some emotions you didn't even know you had, or you don't know how to articulate it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You don't have to say I'm hurting inside like that. Yeah. So yeah, therapy, that definitely helped. That definitely helped too.
Yeah. That's true, Hamka. I feel like, you know, if you break an arm, you go to the doctor. If you, mm-hmm. you know, like, but what happens when your brain is like fried? And
right.
like you say, you're not emotionally regulated. I mean, you know, you do the best you can, but, you know, you really have to have some supports to keep you on track.
Right.
And so what you just said is very true. And I found that's when the enemy comes in, you know, mm-hmm. when you already thinking wrong. And if you ain't got that relationship, like we've already talked about with God, and you're mm-hmm. not able to recognize that. Yeah. It can be a major thing. So you're right. Therapy definitely helps.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that. You crazy if you're not going. I like
right, right, right.
You I ain't crazy. Never heard it switched
right,
like that.
Right, right. You crazy if you're not going.
Yeah.
Because look, the trauma and the grief that people are going through, some of it, you ain't never been through that. We ain't never been through that. So you don't know how to navigate through that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You don't know how to navigate. And you know, much as your parents, you know, they can give you their wisdom and structure. They that's not their field.
That's
right. So yeah, you're crazy if you ain't going to therapy.
Yeah.
Try yourself.
Yeah. And a lot of times it's whatever the situation may be, it may be too much for them. Like you said, they don't have the tools. That this is not their profession.
Right.
And something else I was going to say, I lost my train of thought, but now you're right about that. Therapy is very important. Yeah, I was one of them people I didn't think, but
because it was hard, but, man. I mean, when my mom passed away, right? You know what I'm saying? The grieving process. I mean, it was kind of hard to go to my dad and ask him and talk to him about it. He grieving over his wife,
the
woman he's been with for over 40 years. So he going through. I can't even imagine what he was going through.
Yeah.
He got to be strong. True. He got to be strong to his sons, you know.
Therapy,
man. Therapy helps.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so we're wrapping up, Homer. I want to ask you. Okay, we hear the word, you know, pain, purpose, and pain. You know how you can find purpose in pain. Do you feel like you found your purpose yet? And if you would like to share, what are your thoughts on that phrase?
Yeah, I found my pain. I found purpose through my pain. With the shooting situation, it allowed me to share my testimony.
Yeah,
and also speak to young kids, especially young boys, or even. Young boys who like raised with both of their parents and mm-hmm. that, you know, and they raised with a certain structure, but then, you know, outside the home, they're in the world, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? They're around, they meet new people. They meet people who come with different environments and stuff. And you gotta be okay. They gotta have enough skin to say, man, I don't, you know, a lot of people can get, what's the word I'm looking for? You could get enticed into living like that, and that ain't really how you was raised. You know what I'm saying?
I see. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
So it could be hard. It can be hard.
Yeah, I think that I like what you just said. You know, your testimony is definitely something young kids need to hear.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and be yourself. And you could be yourself. Yeah. You don't have to be the tough guy. You don't have to hang with the tough guys. You could be yourself and just as cool. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Being a nerd ain't a loser.
That's right.
Going to school every day and do what you're supposed to do don't mean you weak.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You going to work and take care of your business and doing the right thing don't mean you no sucker. Right. You winning.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You got you a job. You doing the right thing. You winning.
Mm-hmm.
You winning.
True.
Yeah. That flash ain't gonna last. Mm-mm. Soon or later, them same people with all that flash, they're going to have to be calling you and you got to send them money from prison.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? True. Like mm-hmm. I be doing. People still call it, throw a couple of dollars on my thing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
These were the dudes who had $4,000 in their pocket every day.
Right.
Now they in the penitentiary want me to send them $40.
Yeah. It's wow how life works.
Yeah. So I try to use my pain with a purpose of just spreading the message of man, don't straddle the fence. Be who you are. That ain't your lifestyle. If you live in that lifestyle, get out of it. It's an end situation. Yeah. You're not gonna be successful. You're not gonna come out. You're gonna come out either dead or you done killed somebody. Or you in prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You ain't got too many options. No, so that's what I try to use my testimony just to share the young men that man, don't go that route. Because I was just blessed to survive it. A lot of people don't.
No, they don't. You're right about that. Okay, homie. So one thing I always like to end the shows with, let me ask you this first. I just want to tell you this. I really enjoy your motivational post. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it just comes out your head, if you're just blessed where you just be posting things or if you read them from somewhere. How do you decide what you're going to post? Because I feel like I can always apply whatever you write to my life in some type of way.
I read it in the morning. I read it in the morning. It's purposely done because it controls another thing. It controls your algorithm. People don't know that. If you type in social media, man, today, forget this thing. Your algorithm, they're gonna start showing you negative stuff, negative posts, negative comments, negative videos. Yep. If you put on there, man, God is good, and hey, go do the right thing, and da 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 da. Your algorithm changed. The stuff you see changed. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
A lot of stuff you cheat, it changed your attitude and everything. So I try to bring some positive messages every now and then. I try to put little jokes and stuff in there. I read in the morning. I read in the morning, like, oh, dang, that's pretty cold right there. Let me let me share that. So that's how I come up with them sometimes.
Yeah, it's making an impact. I'll tell you that. Because like I say, I feel like, I mean, you get responses off of them. And like I say, it can apply to like our everyday life. Like the things we're going through just to keep people going. Because it's so easy to go down the rabbit hole, you know, whatever you got going on. So I was going to ask you about them. Because I'm like, you come with some hard stuff.
Yeah. I be thinking that stuff to myself too. I'm like, boy, that's hard. Man. You hard, T.
Right. Okay, so one of my final things I'm gonna ask you, Homer, is so Quinn was all into music, and I always like to ask people, if you could have a song be your life story, what would it be and why?
Ooh, if I had a song that could be my life story. Oh man, I think I listened to it earlier. What's her name? Oh, Juanita Bynum. Juanita Bynum? You know who she is?
Yeah.
She got a song called I Don't Mind Waiting.
Oh, that's a...
That'll be my life song right there. I Don't Mind Waiting. Y'all look that up. I Don't Mind Waiting.
That's a good one, Homer. Yeah, that is a good one.
That'll be my life. We have to wait. Wait.
Yeah. That patience. Yeah. Yeah, that patience. Waiting and... It can be hard, but I'm now thinking of the lyrics of it, and that is a very powerful song.
Yeah, I don't mind waiting, man. Because when I was a kid, I was in a hurry. I wanted to be grown so fast.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm old. I want to be a kid.
You want to go back?
Yeah, I want to go back to be a kid.
Hit the right line, buddy.
Right. Yeah.
That's a good one.
I don't mind waiting. Now I'm learning to be patient.
Yeah.
Now I said that. Now it's going to be some stuff happening all this week that's going to cause me to be patient.
You don't have no choice but to sit in it.
I did say that.
Right. Well, I'm gonna ask you this last thing and we're gonna get out of here, homie. What's some final thoughts you got for anybody that's listening from our whole podcast today? Any key points you want people to remember from the whole podcast?
Man, key thing I want you to remember is it's okay with being who you are. It's okay with being who you are. You don't have to be perfect. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to envy somebody else how they came up or you know what I'm saying, how they was raised. You know what I'm saying? Do your best, trust in God, and treat people the way you want to be treated.
Yeah.
We'll go a lot further. We treat people the way we want to be treated.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
We'll go real far like that.
That is true. Thank you so much, Hama, for being on. I really, really, I can't say more. Say it enough. I really, mm-hmm. really appreciate it.
Man, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me, man. Tell your mom, yes, everybody, I said hello.
Yes, sir. I surely will. And I always end every episode, Quinn used to say, all is well, no matter what was going on. So I'm going to end it with all is well.
All is well. All righty. All right.
We'll see y'all next episode. We'll all right. going on into, man, it's going to be March. Yeah, March. It's March.
It's moving.
You're going by fast.
It totally is. It's going fast. It's going fast. But hey, thank you for having me on
sir.
Your show.
Yes, sir.
I really enjoyed myself. You are doing a great job. Keep up the good work. Mama. Keep up the good work.
I appreciate it. Well, you guys have a good week. Yeah. Talk to y'all soon.
Peace.
We hope that today's episode has encouraged you and helped to identify strategies to navigate your grief and begin the process of moving forward in life. Grief Tribe, Healing Vibes. What were some key takeaways from today's episode? Drop a comment below and remember to like, follow, and subscribe.